Welcome, everyone, to the Literal Fiction Book Club, where we read books so you don't have to. My name is Sam Johnson, and joining me today is...
Alex.
And Troy.
Today, we are discussing Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. It is a story of a young lady who fucks, written by an older woman who also fucks. To kick things off, we were talking a bit beforehand about the general election in the UK. Do we have any first reactions?
Looks like it's over for Corbyn. I think that it's interesting that they did like successfully target key districts. Like, smart politics is playing strategically. Like, the right wing in this country has done well because they targeted state politics. And I feel like the UK did it well in their election. Like, they went after weak potential swing districts and they won.
It's pretty amazing because a lot of the constituencies that the Tories won this time around, I don't think they've won in like 50 years or something like that. They've been pretty much Labour strongholds for the living memory.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to like how exhausted people are by Brexit. Like, they want it over. Like, the ambiguities is not.
Well, if that was the case, I would have expected the Lib Dems to do a little bit better. It actually seems like they want Brexit, period.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
Like, I wanted the Lib Dems back. I wish they had come back more. It's too bad. I like
that's
the Lib Dems.
That's such a Troy thing to say.
I think you're alone in that opinion.
I know.
I really wish we just had the, you know, the sane foreign policy of George H.W. Bush.
Some of it, not all of it.
Common sense diplomacy.
Realpolitik, yeah. I'm for it.
But yeah, we'll see how it plays out. I believe the exit polls indicated an 87-seat majority for the Tory party this time around. So we're talking about a shellacking of historic importance here.
Yeah, like a once a century. Just owning.
And, you know, it's very strange, too, because, like, Labour pretty much emphasized this manifesto as their calling card. And I really do wonder how the left-identifying groups like Momentum in Labour are going to react to this this defeat. Because on one hand, you could say maybe they'll chalk it up to tactical errors or something like that, or maybe simply their like very mealy-mouthed Brexit position of Labour. But something tells me that there's going to be like a fall into cynicism and nihilism from them because they couldn't convince the countryside to be less racist or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not obviously an expert on this, but I feel like the takeaway is that the manifesto itself was unpopular is probably not the right takeaway out of this election. Like, I don't think that resonated with people, or like that was not the major focus of this election. I think they kind of hoped they would distract from Brexit and from their really weak position on Brexit. And I don't think it managed to like get the attention.
I think despite Labour's like decent policy ideas on a lot of different things, they've just not had good leadership. It's like they have not led on Brexit for quite a while. I'm not really a Corbyn fan, but I do like a lot of like historical people from Labour. I just feel like it needs different party leadership.
They weren't able to really wrestle with Brexit.
It's weird too, because Labour has a very strong tradition of Euroscepticism. Like, even Jeremy Corbyn was a Eurosceptic for most of his tenure in the House of Commons, and his mentor, Tony Benn, was against the EU, I believe, when it first formed. So it's not like Labour has traditionally or reflexively been a pro-EU party on the basis of internationalism, which is normally the argument. But we're a pro-Brexit podcast, I think. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I respect it. They voted to have it, so they should have it. Like, it would weaken their government structure if they just nullified it. Like, you can't do that. Yeah. They voted for it. You have to have it.
I think that nations deserve to have sovereignty, especially in the face of neoliberalism. Like, if that
the greatest
is
of all evils,
if that is internationalism, if that's the pinnacle of internationalism, like, I'm over it.
Yeah, and it's just like after seeing what the EU did to Greece and Italy and threatened to do to Spain, like, you know, what about that looks appealing unless you're Germany?
I have no idea. And like, it seems like there's like a middle class liberal hysteria about Brexit, kind of on par with
Trump anti-Trumpism.
Yeah, yeah. Which I know Alpha Bunga Bunga, which is the best podcast probably, has like talked a lot and drawn a lot of parallels on, but I think it's you know, an accurate comparison. But that, like, the world is ending kind of mentality is...
It's weird because they do this every, you know, every 15, 20 years when a new conservative force, you know, enters office. It's the end of the world, you know, fascism is coming or whatever. And it turns out to not be true. And I don't know what to tell them, but maybe it's just because I don't spend as much time around conservatives or read them that I, you know, they appear more reasonable in some way. But for the most part, it's like, I don't know what to do with these liberals at this point. It's embarrassing, like, how they behave.
I mean, I think your average Trump voter is probably as embarrassing. But if we're talking about, like, serious conservatives, they have coherent worldviews that are reasonable, though in a lot of ways, obviously, we disagree with them. But I can understand how they draw those conclusions, and they seem to be fact-based, which you can't really say for centrists.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, Alex and I come from the... You know, we would characterize by the hard left in some ways, right? Like, you have a bit more of an anarchist background and
background.
No.
Yeah, background. But
background as in the past, please.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please.
He's only made like 3 bombs, people.
No, right. No. Please do not drag me on my own podcast.
We'll refrain from doing so. And I have, you know, I am a more of like a Marxist communist type. So a lot of my news feed is taken up by communists. And it is jarring to me how, you know, people spend so much time getting into like the deep lore of Soviet history and, you know, the story of the Second International and all that. And then the UK election comes around and they're crying. They're like physically upset that Jeremy Corbyn is, you know, taking the beating that he's done. And like, I don't know what the Labour Party has to do with socialism. Like, there's nothing.
Corbyn killed Rosa.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
But they don't say that, though. I wonder why. Corbyn gets a pass in the way that DSA doesn't, like with Marxists.
Well, I think it's because of the history of the Labour Party and, you know, it being actually related to labor from its inception and also a real party in the sense that you can be a member of it.
Right. But I mean, it's the same kind of crowd, I think.
Yeah, right? it's progressive point. Capitalism or self-conceived progressive capitalism. I don't even know if they are that anymore because what they seem to be advocating for is backwards, not forwards. I actually think that the conservatives are taking the lead in the next development of capitalism there. They're going to ride that wave, whereas the traditionally progressive forces are trying to go backwards where you're not going.
Yeah, they just want to grasp at that little flicker in the past that was like a socialist movement. They want to grasp at that and recreate that.
Or just back to the welfare, you know, statism of post-World War II, as if you could go back to that. Like, I just don't get that. What are we going to just like live in eternity as the... You know, the post-war boom, like, is that how that's going to be?
We need tech socialism, cyber socialism.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people are saying, I guess. But, you know, and that actually, good point, Troy, because, like, I did it.
You did it.
Good point, Troy. Like, even Corbyn's, you know, like, what is his high-tech plan is to nationalize broadband. Like, I couldn't think of anything less innovative. And it's also weird because... Nationalizing something doesn't necessarily solve anything. Like, public services can be just as bad as privately held services, and often quite worse.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, often a lot of times they're worse, but
it really depends on how it's implemented and by whom. And, you know, like, if you want to give the idea of publicly owned goods a bad name, you know, give it to a shittily run department.
Yeah, I don't think that's like a fair argument against nationalizing industry, because I think obviously we want to nationalize industry.
I think it should be whatever is, like, if it is a utility, if it's ruled to be a utility, it should be free to people like other things are as well. Just if it's in the interest of the public in general, like, you want to educate the population, give them free access to the internet, it makes sense.
But yeah, and I mean, I don't even understand the argument against national ownership of its natural resources. I think that's one of the most like.
What do you mean?
So the people are sovereign, so they should own the resources.
I can't think of a single compelling argument as to why like natural resources in a country should be privately held. Or any, or I guess.
Well, I guess so. My point would be is that does the government, like, does the national government represent the people's sovereignty?
No, not currently.
Yeah.
I think it should.
I mean, it should, but like, yeah. And especially, like, you could make an argument, obviously, for the elected bodies of people, but like, the bureaucracy? No fucking way, dude. Like, the Department of Energy is in no way representative of, like, the American. You know, population. They're just.
Are you saying there's not
parasite.
Enough representation within the Department of Energy? Is that the position of this podcast?
Yes. We want to expand the franchise. We want to elect every bureaucrat. And
New Hampshire fucking does. We elect everyone here.
Or we can have a tournament.
I still want to see boxing matches between politicians, MMH cage fights.
Yeah, between Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg.
I mean. Not even kidding, I would pay good money to be there for that.
Oh, Trump would definitely be in the ring. He's been on fucking, what was it, WWE, I think
yeah,
it was?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
No, but I did see there was a couple communists that on like Facebook friends of mine who referenced Nick Fuentes and were talking about, not quoting him, but like saying that he is somebody who could like really blow up as a fascist superstar.
Yeah, he could. I think that's right.
Much more than Richard Spencer.
Everyone hates Richard Spencer.
Yeah, he's kind of a persona non grata now, right?
He's not a fascist either. He's a social democrat.
What?
Richard Spencer?
Yeah, he's not a fascist.
No, he's more of like a white nationalist, but he's definitely like of the... He's not a social democrat.
He's a social democrat. He wants social democracy for white people.
Right. He wants an ethno-state.
Yes.
Enlightened ethno state.
Right.
But, like, he doesn't.
No, he's like a.
But he's not a fascist. He supports liberalism.
Yeah, right, right. He's kind of like, I think, what is it? Like, that the Little Englanders in the olden times? It was like the Young England. It was like one of the wings of the Tory party where the aristocrats who were kind of liberal, but they wanted to maintain peasant society, they wanted to keep. The social fabric cohesive.
Oh yeah, could be.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, everyone hates him now on the right wing.
Why?
Because he's not a fascist and they think he's a cuck.
He fell flat.
Like, yeah, he just didn't succeed at anything he did. Aside from coining the term alt-right. They all hate the alt-right now. They all did like the whole Nick Fuentes thing. They don't consider themselves alt-right.
What do they consider themselves?
America First.
Huh, interesting.
Like he's founding a party or a movement called the America First Movement.
Interesting. He's going to be someone to watch. I actually think he could be someone in like 2 years. Did you guys see Trump's tweet about Greta?
Yes.
That was so good.
It's unreal.
Where he was like, you know, she should just go, you know, go with a friend to a movie. Chill, Greta, chill.
I can't believe it's like the. I just can't believe that it's real. Like that's our president and like that.
He's just such a
twat. Do you like Greta?
No. No. I'm not saying like I'm offended by him making fun of Greta. It's just the fact that the president of the United States is like tweeting at a teenager telling her to chill.
Yeah.
Like something about that is just like,
no, it's really something else.
Yeah. I don't even
He's know a reality that. TV star. Like he's You're a right. slimy New Yorker.
Totally.
But he's also our president.
It's gross, isn't it? Like looking back in history, a corrupt business guy rides a wave of like, right-wing resurgence and captures the presidency. Like it'll be an interesting to see it down the line.
The thing is that like tons of our presidents, if they had access to social media, would probably be saying worse shit.
Oh, for real. Yeah.
So I mean
Andrew Jackson with social media.
Yeah, he's exactly the person I was thinking about. You know, so it's like it's a problem of the modern age.
Yeah, it's a problem of the modern age, and then like, you know, I definitely think Trump is not as well put together as some of the other presidents we've had.
No.
Yeah. You think that?
Yeah, I think that.
Whoa, dude.
I know, hot take.
Although, you know, like crazy narcissistic people, they live a long ass time.
I know. Yeah, look at Joe Biden.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Dude.
No, dude, he's falling apart.
Ooh, boy. Yeah. Some of those videos where he's like challenging people to fight, saying.
That's good stuff, though. He is just your drunk grandpa. It's fun.
Really is the center right's answer to Trump. I mean, like, in so many ways.
He's like the last never Trumper standing in a way, right? He's not kinda, a Republican, yeah. But that would be their pick.
Mitt Romney should run again. Like Romney to Electric Boogaloo. That'd be fucking hilarious.
I would be surprised if he didn't run again.
You mean after Trump?
Yeah.
I think probably.
That's probably the plan.
I wonder who comes after Trump for the Republicans. There's nobody who's really a clear...
Pence has no shot.
No, I don't think so.
No. I don't think the abortion issue plays, and that's like his thing.
I haven't seen any, you know, rising stars out of the Republican Party that would follow Trump's legacy. Because they're all cuts. Like
Paul Ryan, probably.
No, Paul. I don't think Paul Ryan will.
You don't think so?
I feel like he's his speakership was too, yeah. I don't know, just...
Oh, do you mean who's going to follow in Trump's footsteps?
Yeah.
Who's just going to run as a Republican?
I think Trump has blown up the Republican Party. Like, they didn't want him to be elected in the first place. And now that they have to deal with him, now that they actually have to deal with him and his legacy, I'm wondering who's going to, like, continue whatever it is he did. I really don't think he's an aberration.
But I feel like he has the personality where it's like nobody's going to be exactly the same. But I think you're right. He blew up the Republican Party. Like, it's as messed as the Democrats are right now. Like, they're both in shambles.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I have no idea. Like, he only has, like, what, a couple senators and congressmen who are, like, his guys, you know?
Yeah, everybody does not want to do what he wants to do. A lot of his resistance comes from within the Republican Party.
Totally.
I don't think he's going to be reelected because he's lost the military support. Like,
you don't think he's going to be reelected?
We'll see.
Military is a big, that is a big cohort of people to lose.
Well, he's lost the official military support, like the top brass, but I think, I don't know about veterans or active duty military people.
Yeah, but those, I don't know. It's just the top people also have a lot of money and like pull and who gets contracts and like they have power. They have bureaucratic power.
True. But I don't know how much the bureaucratic power really plays anymore because that was kind of Clinton's thing.
True. Yeah.
And it fell flat.
Well, she had a lot of the bureaucracy, but I don't know. I feel like the military went for Trump in 2016.
Oh, yeah, probably.
But like brass, too. Not just the grunts.
I'm also not familiar. I know a lot of the like other paramilitary bureaucrats like the FBI or the CIA are against Trump, but not. I don't know about. Are the generals against Trump? Is that a thing?
Now they are. Like he was shitty to John Kelly? Who was his chief of staff? I think it was John Kelly.
Mattis? No.
No, Mattis was defense, but he also got treated shittily.
He did. He got treated really shittily.
Mathis was honestly the best person I thought on that staff, which was bad because...
What?
His staff sucks.
Yeah, like, it does suck.
They all suck.
They do all suck. I'll give you that.
But it's terrifying that a military guy was appointed to a role that should be held by a civilian, but he's the only one that wasn't corrupt as fuck.
Mm, that is troubling, like that like inclusion of military and government. Like I was reading or hearing something about Bolsonaro's regime and like this massive amount of military in his cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Or you look at the, it's not Bolivia, is it?
The Bolivian coup?
Yeah, the right-wing coup.
You see their
government, it's all fucking Christian fundamentalists and, you know, former military or current military leaders.
Yep.
I think it's interesting that Mexico took him in.
Yeah, I think so, too.
He's starting to sling videos online, too.
Well, I mean, from all I've been, even his supporters, he lost the ability to, like, he brought to a vote to the country to change the Constitution so he could run again, and he lost that and decided to run anyway against the Constitution. So a lot of the reason why it was so close was because he was, even by running at all, was going against a Democratic mandate. And then it obviously turned to fucking insanity.
That's what sucks, though, because, like, he was a good president.
Yeah, but he can't be president forever.
I know, you can't abuse power, though. No matter how good your ideas are, you can't abuse the power.
And it's amazing how, like, similar all these situations are with how, like, liberals or leftists will punish you for not supporting this. Like, I kept seeing these letters coming out from different Bolivians who were saying, you know, I think it's the MAS is the like lefty socialist party in Bolivia, like that they were being accused of being counter-revolutionaries or reactionaries because they criticized the MAS. And it's like, what are you fucking talking about?
I saw a couple takes on Facebook saying that seeing the coup is the reason why socialism needs to have authoritarianism. That was like the takeaway.
Whoa.
Yeah, you didn't see that.
Oh, Lordy.
I did not.
Yes. Well, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, but the argument was that like without authoritarianism, the counter-revolution always wins. So this coup, that is the takeaway, is that we should ignore democracy. That was the takeaway, which I thought was like, huh.
Yeah, this sounds preferable to that, to be perfectly honest. This, I'm saying this as in like, you know, somewhat state oppressed, but mostly free liberal capitalism sounds preferable to the both authoritarianisms.
Oh.
Like the one that take is proposing sounds worse than our lives are now.
Oh, our lives are now. I thought you were saying worse than the right wing coup.
No.
No, yeah.
No, I think Christian fundamentalism plus militarism is pretty fucking bad.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were saying. You're like,
yeah, that's a real that's bad better. Combo.
Yeah. And I was like, what do you mean that's better? But yeah, I totally agree. But anyways, let's get to the book.
All right, so we ready to talk about the book, boys?
Yes.
All right. So as I said at the beginning of the show, we have just read Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston, and it is the story of a young woman named Janie who runs through a bunch of men. I mean, that's basically how the plot moves along. And each relationship she has is different. Her first is kind of a marriage of necessity, and then the next one is a marriage of opulence, and then the third one I would say is like a marriage of love. And the story ends quite tragically. But I thought overall it was well put together, and once I could really dial into the dialogue that was going on, because it's written with it's basically a black southern accent, and you kind of have to get used to reading it in order to understand what's going on. I thought it was a really powerful and well put together book. I get why it's a classic.
I got the same thing that I felt with was it reading Toni Morrison? I forget the name of the book, Beloved, where it's just like an extremely almost like tortured character that's just really sad and like strong but also passive. Like, I don't know, it's an odd combination, but I felt the same thing that I felt for the daughter in Beloved.
Yeah, and like, well, I guess I haven't read Beloved, but like she is passive mostly, but that she does take action in ways that kind of seem rash, like throughout the book. Like when she does, it's like mostly like leaving her husband, or you know, taking up with Tea Cake, and then like finally, you know, that moment where she shoots him is like a really intense like act, you know. And so it's like it's a very like active role that she takes like right at the end, even though it's in self defense. Like, it's an extreme thing for her to do, and a lot of her life has been kind of following the whims of men.
Yeah, I mean, well, you said rash, and I think the only rash decision she made was to leave with Joe Starks there, because
right,
the book literally fast forwards for 20 years later while she's like becomes a battered, you know, shell of a woman because she's with this
Joe.
With Joe. Yeah, Mayor,
like a
Joe.
Velvet tyranny. She's the richest woman in town, but she's miserable.
Yeah.
I really, really liked when Janie is when she's telling Phoebe, her friend, that she wants to go off with Tea Cakes, her lover, love marriage, and how she's explaining that, you know, I don't want to live the way my grandmother wanted me to. I want to live how I want to. And her grandmother grew up as a slave, and her understanding of like what making it was being in the big house, like, you know, the white woman, right?
Just sitting on the porch.
Yep.
What high chair, yeah. Quite literally said.
And, you know, Janie finally makes it being with this like big shot, you know, basically town founder who is Joe Starks, and she finds out that's not for her. She just wants to be with a simple, fun-loving man who apparently farms for beans, and
he's a salt really, of the earth kind of guy,
and was really good at dice and likes to, you know, sling dick,
play his guitar, fuck, roll dice.
Sounds good to me.
It was like a life, like it was passion. Like, it's the difference between like material comfort and passion, because obviously she like wasn't materially comfortable when they were in the Everglades. Like, that was like far from the case, but it was like a life that she was like passionate about and having fun and kind of enjoying like the more what's the word,
Caribbean lifestyle.
Caribbean, nice.
I was gonna say like the physical pleasures of life, but yeah,
hedonistic.
Sure. Yeah, hedonistic. Yeah,
yeah.
Staying up all night, hanging out. Yeah,
I also feel like it's kind of Latin too. Like people just stay up really late in Cuba and Spain, and I don't know.
Well, they're hanging out with Bahamians.
It's because it's warm. Just like you just stay up later.
Sounds nice.
And you basically don't have to work.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
Spain, like they don't.
Or I mean, like the work they were doing picking the beans was physical, but the way she describes it was like it was very fun. Everyone's hanging out and having a good time doing it.
Yeah, and there was no like real emphasis on efficiency or, you know, production requirements or whatever. It was almost like peasant like.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like plenty of time for leisure, which is something that's very, you know, different than like her job at a store where it was all day, the constant monotony, drudgery, and, you know, complicated math and stuff.
And not just, well, she got to be outside the whole, all the time, for better or worse. Like, all the animals, being in nature, like, not being stuck in a store where everybody tells you to shut up and is, like, trying to grab your ass and hit on you. It's like, she's treated terribly in that store.
Do you think that she used the imagery of the Native Americans, like, to make that point? That's kind of what I was thinking, like, because it wasn't like they played a significant role outside of kind of foreshadowing or just warning of the hurricane coming, but she would just kind of see them strolling around. Like, do you think that was kind of an image she was trying to create in comparing like the lifestyle of the Native Americans to them picking the beans?
No, because she, why, is it her tea cakes? They're like, no, Native Americans are dumb. If they weren't, they'd still own the country. One character says that.
That's what they were saying when they were referencing whether or not the hurricane was going to come. But the Native Americans were right. The hurricane came.
Sure did.
And Tea Cake got fucking bit in the face by a dog.
By a rabid dog.
Yeah, he gets bit in the face.
Then stabs it to death.
Yeah, this book is real about that.
The following with the court case that Janie was a part of, and then do you guys remember the conversation at the end of the court case where it was like, you know, them white women or white men and black women, they get away with everything. Yeah. Some of the black guys were talking about that
because she looked that way. They're like, oh, yeah, she's hot.
Yeah, she looked that way. She looked so like remorseful and, you know, fragile.
It said she was like a high yellow skin color.
Yeah, which, it talks about her looks like throughout the book.
Yeah, it talks a lot about caramel. Like darker black people not being as attractive or less valuable.
Did
like,
you find
valuable.
That lady kind of grating, the one who was like...
The mulatto?
Yeah, who didn't want to hang around with black people.
Yeah, she was better than
was
them.
Was she Miss Turner?
Turner, I think it was. Yeah. Because her husband was a fucking loser.
Yeah.
She's like a wannabe of all the white people in Fort Lauderdale.
But then look what happened to her.
I forget what happened to her.
Her restaurant got trashed by a bunch
of
drunk people.
Including Tea Cakes.
Yeah.
Who was trying to defend her honor.
Yeah, but just made everything worse.
Which is a cool Tea Cakes thing to do.
It is a cool Tea Cake thing to do. And then it just was like, nah, let's all hang out.
Yeah, just, buddy.
The image of them leaving the store just wrecked and they're just like going to get wasted.
And then those two guys come back and they give her $5.
Yeah, because they had lost all their money because it was payday. Tea Cakes is a cool, like, blue-collar character. He worked on the rail yard crew. Got cut in a dice game, like, because he stole... Well, he didn't steal. He won it fairly, but this just, like, massive guy got upset and stabs him in the back.
Yeah, and, like, he just... He works enough to get whatever he needs, like, food for a picnic or to rent a car. And then he just is like, all right, I'm done.
I thought that whole story of him going off with her $200 and then like being like, I just want to know what it was like to be a millionaire, right? And he just spends till he has $20 left and he's like, you know what? I'm going to win this all back with dice. That's fucking cool.
It is cool. Yeah, I think that scene, not knowing what's going to happen, because I've read this book before, but I had totally forgotten, was probably like the darkest scene in the book, in my opinion. Like imagining the feeling of being her, being like, what is he doing? Like, is he gone? Like, that's probably the darkest moment in the book.
That's how I felt. I was like, oh my God, no, not again. I was like, she just got away from this mayor, Joe.
Yep.
Joe had hit her often and she just like retreated into herself. I was like, oh no, don't have her like rebound. Also be a shithead.
Yeah. And then there's the comparison of that, the old woman who got played.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. It's like 3 pages. It's just brutal on this other middle-aged woman. And she like came back to town. Everybody laughed at her.
Oof, awful. Well, so I guess in that part makes you think about the beginning of the book where she's coming back to town having to explain.
Ooh, yeah, I didn't get that connection. That's good, though.
Yeah, like, and that's why she has to explain to Phoebe, like, the story about, like, how she had a passionate love with tea cake and, you know, shit didn't work out. He got rabies.
Right.
There was no social, well, there was social security, but they're in Jim Crow. What time is this set in?
I want to say, like,
is it the 30s?
1920s?
Yeah, I think it's the 1920s because they have cars and airplanes.
I was going to say, they mention Ford, Cadillac. So I think it's like the
Lincoln too.
30s, maybe even 40s, but just like rural poverty.
Real, yeah, but he says he wants to get the town incorporated. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I assume pre-depression.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking 30s or 40s. I wasn't sure though.
Just imagine a time though when Fort Lauderdale was the place to be.
Ugh, goddamn.
Now it's just a fucking garbage heap.
It is honestly the worst.
Imagine when all these towns are like first, like even Las Vegas. They're all just being founded, new cities in the 20th century. It's cool.
It is really cool. Did you guys watch Deadwood?
No, I've heard good things, though.
Oh, it's so good. It's just about a town that's unincorporated, not in the United States yet. And so it's kind of lawless, and them trying to turn it into part of a territory, one of the Dakotas.
Is there a Joe Starks character?
Yeah, kind of.
Guy just walks in and just like, I'm going to be mayor.
But he's like an absolute piece of shit, but he's... It's great.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Starks was kind of a piece of shit.
He was a smart guy. Like, he was a dick, but, like, he got what he needed and what he wanted. And everybody willingly basically went along with it. He just convinced them.
He had a magnetic personality, for sure. But he was boring to his wife.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't fuck. Didn't happen.
He wasn't a man.
Well, no. And he was so possessive. I really did,
and
like...
And he got fat. Real fat.
I liked Zora's little insights into male psychology. Like, she didn't do it very often. Most of the time, Janie was kind of the center stage of her descriptions. But she had, like, the bit about Joe being out when he saw other men checking Janie out in the store, how he got, like, very jealous and possessive. And then even the description when Tea Cakes slapped Janie around, you know, that he did it so that they would all know, like, that the... Mrs. Turner would know that he's in control, right? She doesn't have any say here.
Well, he only did it hard enough to, like, leave a little mark, right?
Right.
This wasn't, like, a savage beating of anger. It was a calculated thing.
I mean, I feel like that's so dark.
Oh, it's horrible, yeah.
Like, oh, man, that's
super
dark. But
it was said in passing, and there wasn't really any, especially with the way the novel concluded, it doesn't seem like Zora seems to be recording the event more than making a judgment on it.
Mm. I actually was thinking about where this would be for, like, women's movements, and then it made me think of when the book was set. It was written in 1937, so it's 30s.
There you go.
So what do we think about the grandmother's, like, idea of success with it being in the big house?
I think it's reasonable. I don't understand why she would want that for her granddaughter completely.
But it didn't look like Louis was going to give it to her, you know?
I mean, he was going to give her material security and, like, comfort beyond which that her grandmother probably ever knew.
But do you think that Janie's focus on love and finding love, because that seems to be the string that runs through all these relationships, is her saying, you know, in the beginning when she's about to marry Louis, she's saying, okay, well, maybe this is it, right? Maybe this is something I need to learn. And then with Joe, she meets this... you know, fast-talking, very charismatic, stylish man who goes and becomes mayor of the town. And she says, okay, well, maybe, you know, wealth and notoriety, you know, maybe that'll be it. And that doesn't turn out to be it. And then it really comes down to this, like, homegrown, salt of the earth, you know, funny, engaging guy who she falls in love with. And I'm wondering, like, do we buy Zora's take on the, like, what love is? You know, is Tea Cakes and Janie, is that love?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess I don't really know. But
what do you think love is, brother?
I have no idea, man. A bunch of chemicals going off. You know, I think there's like loves of... There's something that is like a love of... like a companionship and a partnership.
Comfort,
and then there's
too.
Comfort and into routine and into a life in a home. And then I think there's also like passionate love. Like, the thing is like if Tea Cake had lived and they had spent 25 years together, do you think it would have gone as well?
I mean, she seemed pretty taken by him.
Yeah, but it was only 2 years.
That's true. She was with Joe for a long time.
Yeah. I think it can, but I think her character is a little bit, I don't know, not fleeting, but passive. Like, she's strong in parts, but she also is just kind of, like, I don't know, takes it and just goes with whatever because she feels like she doesn't have any power.
Until a different opportunity presents itself to her.
Right, yeah, she's very opportunistic. But, yeah. Like, she loved her hair, and for 20 years she kept it covered because Joe wanted her to.
Yep.
And that was, like, painful for her, but she just, like, nope. But then as soon as that's gone, she seems, like, very free and open.
I do like that Zora emphasizes the womanly part of Janie's womanhood, right? Like, you know, big lips, big hair, you know, fat ass, like, you know, like those are the things that make Janie desirable to the men around her.
I'm pretty sure it's the first chapter she describes her hair and her ass, like,
yeah,
in detail.
Right.
Like, that's like how she introduces the character immediately is like, this is physically like a very, very like womanly person, physically, figure, whatever.
Well, yeah, her physique is important to her. Just like everybody always, I don't know, wants something from her. I feel like she's kept down. Like, she does just want to go on 2-3 year relationships instead of being in the store or with her first husband. She knows, like, right away.
Mm.
Like, in the first relationship, staying in the house, she's like, nope. And gets that immediately.
Well, because her grandmother told her that it would come through, you know, the marital bond. But I think for someone like her grandmother who never knew freedom or,
who was enslaved?
I feel like growing up in freedom is, yeah. I feel like somebody that has been enslaved and especially was from birth, like, that's so scarring to your psyche. I don't know that you can really break that or forget everything that you had been raised in. Like, she probably can't even imagine what Janie's, I don't know, just, yeah, being and going wherever you wanted, even if it wasn't materially the best.
Yeah, and then, like, if you are, if you have concerns, like, you are a slave, like, you're not going to be prioritizing in the same way, like, my personal happiness or your, you know, emotional fulfillment, because you have much greater problems ahead of you. Whereas Janie is in that generation where she is able to kind of come to terms with self-actualization in a way that her grandmother didn't really have the chance to. So it's interesting that her grandmother wanted her to have the chance at, you know, being like Phoebe was talking about, like, being, you know, the woman on the big chair, like, sitting, but maybe that isn't exactly what it's about. You know what I mean? It's more about self-actualization and finding happiness in your own in your own life and being emotionally fulfilled. But her grandmother couldn't even really, like, think of that because that wasn't her priority. It was like food, house, you know.
Well, and her dreams were of social status, right? Like, the only people that were safe or respected were the ones who were sitting in the chair, right? And so it wasn't because, you know, Janie at the end there, it wasn't like they were poor. They had money. I mean, they weren't rich, but I don't know. I think in whatever 1920s dollars, right, like $1,500, $2,000 was a fair bit of cash.
But she never touched it.
She never touched it.
That's the thing. She was smart
with money. Like,
yeah.
She's dumb in other ways and or rash, but yeah, she was good with money throughout the entire thing. She kept the money from Tea Cake. She didn't want to just give it to him outright. He just stole it. He didn't even ask.
He took it from her, yeah.
But he brought back, you know,
he won like $400 or something.
I think it was $357. He brought back in a blood, blood drowned wad of cash.
But it is funny that, like, he takes her money that first time, then that's not something that happens again. Like, from that moment on, he provides for her completely, aside from her picking beans a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's a good husband to her.
I like Tea Cakes a lot.
I like him, aside from the...
Yeah, the abuse.
The physical abuse.
Yeah, hey, you gotta let a couple of them slide, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, Zora Neale Hurston certainly did.
Yeah, she definitely
did. She painted
did.
That almost as a positive interaction.
Yes.
Yeah, we're Me Too-ing Zora Neale Hurston.
Well, I mean, no, she...
Actually, she would get her ass Me Too.
Yeah, she definitely would.
Oh, for sure.
She was, you know... Yeah, we can Me Too Zora Neale Hurston. I think so.
Yeah.
Just three, you know, three 21st century white guys, you know, doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, you know, this is
exposing a black woman.
Zora Neale Hurston called
for the predator
out.
That she is.
I mean, if y'all had a hot, what did she teach? Literature or
I
something?
I think it was literature.
I'd assume, yeah.
A hot, like, MILF professor. Like, she did bang grad students.
Dude, I'd totally bang her.
Wait, of course.
Wait, yeah, 100%. Consenting. I'd consent.
Shout out to Bryce, everybody. My cousin listens to the podcast.
Again, huge shout out.
Love him. He's one of the coolest guys I've ever known.
I did that thing where I didn't do my whole intro, so I'm going to add the phone number that you can leave a voicemail. We have a
Google. We'll just put that at the wrap-up.
Well, I mean, I'm going to also put it in here, so if people want to, you know, you're listening, you can call us.
Collins.
You can call us at 1-978-255-3404.
Leave your voicemails, guys.
We'll play them on the show.
Yeah, no edits.
Uncensored. Triple X.
Tell us which character from Anna Karenina you are.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm 11. All right, back to the book.
Back to the book.
We don't have much content in this episode.
It's going to be a free-flowing episode. Not book content, but sometimes that happens. I mean, I don't know. What else do we want to...
We got some good book content. Characters. We talked about the characters.
I mean, I finished the book this morning, so I didn't have a great amount of time to, like, you know, come up with a... like some lead-off stuff, but
yeah,
I was hoping because it was a whole book that we would be able to go on for a while.
It honestly kind of came off as like a short, it felt like a short book, a novella or whatever.
Yeah.
It is only, what is it, 190 pages?
And I don't know if it was like my mood when I read the book or whatever, but I don't know. The story was good. I thought that the prose were pretty good, but not, I mean, there were some things that jumped off the page to me, but not like so much so that I really wanted to write them down, you know?
You know, the use of the vernacular I thought was really interesting.
I like the way they say hungry. I'm hungry.
Yeah,
I'm like
chilling that. Hungry.
You know, Troy, I thought about you. At one point in the book, around halfway through, they use the word terrectly, which is something that you brought up in the last step when we talked about Flannery.
Yeah, there's a lot of intense and just crazy jargon in this. It's almost like it's written in dialect, but it's cool. Like, it sounds as I can imagine somebody saying it this way.
Yeah, it was like a takeaway that I had, is that like reading through it, I could like hear somebody saying every single sentence.
It's tough though. Like, the first 50 pages are tough.
Yeah, it takes a while to get used to it. This is a good book to read in one sitting or two. You know, you want to read it quick.
Definitely. I read it in two sittings.
Same.
You look like you're ready for a quote, my dude.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to for some of the prose we talked about. Not all of it was extremely memorable. Like, it was fun, but I don't know. I didn't mark it up in the same way. But we had talked about insights into male psychology. So then Joe Starks realized all the meanings in his vanity bled away like a flood. Janie had robbed him of the illusion of irresistible maleness that all men cherish, which was terrible. The thing that Saul's daughter had done to David. But Janie had done worse. She had cast down his empty armor before men and they had laughed.
Yeah.
That's a real fucking thing, dude. Like, even as, like, not, you know, like, I don't have an alpha male bone in my body, like, being laughed at by a bunch of dudes is probably, like, it's worse than being laughed at by any other social situation.
Yeah, completely. Especially if a woman is the person who...
who owned you, yeah.
Yeah. Especially when it's relating directly to, like, your, like, sense of self.
Right. Right.
Like, this isn't just like Chloe roasting. You know, this is...
Yeah, but
No, but we're saying like, you roast, but it's like funny. But this is like someone directly like hitting you at your biggest insecurity, because obviously he's insecure about being impotent.
Yeah, right.
And to do that in front of everybody and to tear him down like that, yeah.
And then the store always got mad laughs. Like, even if he like basically assaulted her in the store... or if people were throwing mean jabs at each other, everybody in the store would just like laugh along with it. It was like, damn, like easy to please crowd in that town.
Mm. No, it's just like the hangout spot. They just drink Coca-Colas.
Yeah.
Play checkers on the porch.
Sounds kind of like a nice life.
Yeah, I mean, all things told, right? I mean, it didn't seem like anybody was being bothered.
No, I mean, that's one thing I noticed, that almost all of the characters in this book seem really happy.
Yeah, that's a good point. And there was only like that one... that one scene, like, even white people really didn't make too much of a a show in this. I mean, not only were there no white characters, but even when white people were mentioned, there was the time that, yeah, though. So when the grandmother talked about, like, the white people in the big house, that was one. And then the other one was when, after the hurricane came through and Tea Cakes and Janie were in that new town that they had run away to. And then they got, Tea Cakes was impressed into, like, the town rebuilding thing or whatever. And they mentioned about how, you know, white people think they know all the good black people. And they don't need to know anymore. And right, they want to, Tea Cakes wants to get back to where they're from because they, you know, they know those white people there and, you know, they're on good terms or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. The only other white person I can think of that's mentioned in the book is Abe Lincoln.
Yep.
Very positively.
No, they mentioned they have the court scene where they're pretty mean to the black people.
Oh, yeah. Right. Good point.
Oh, that's the one of the other ones I wanted to bring up. That's the only line I remember off the top of my head. It talks about all of the black guys in the back in the balcony and they all have to stand and it's like they're all bound together like a celery stalk and I was like, interesting. That was
that's a good
interesting
one.
Choice good.
Yeah, but they were obviously the judge was
white.
Harsh to them.
Yeah,
white and harsh to them.
Yeah, and all the women were glaring at them, but they all love Janie because she was light-skinned.
Yeah,
well, I think it was because she was also a woman, you know, and like the story was so tabloid tragic, you know. Husband gets bit by a rabid dog. Woman has to shoot her husband in self-defense. That was actually, that was a pretty harrowing scene, right?
It was, yeah. It was fittingly a grotesque way to kind of close out the book, too. Like,
and it was so sad that he didn't trust her at the very end. Like, him going mad was about a jealousy that she was going to go bang some other guy out in the field. Probably because that's what he had done earlier.
For sure.
He was totally up in that girl's britches.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, 100%. Also, even just like the tool of using where Janie takes out the first three bullets so that it'll click a couple times before.
Yeah,
like,
that
damn,
scene
dude.
Makes your heart pound just thinking about
whew,
each click.
Gets closer and closer. What a good little literary tool. That was really
it foreshadows
excellent.
It well, too, because it talks about how they go hunting together.
Yeah.
And then he trains her, and she's actually a good marksman.
She gets better than him. He
with
gets
a rifle.
Jealous.
She kills him with the rifle, not the pistol.
You know, I have to say, like, this book is just extremely well written. Like, as, like, a novel itself, standalone, like, it's just, like, almost perfectly crafted. Like, it's just a great read. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't know why. I wish it was, like, 20 pages shorter. Like, just because there's not a whole lot to the plot, like, they just kind of go here, live their life, go there, live their life. It does pick up in time, and the part I like the most was with Tea Cake. It's, like, the last, I don't know, 80 pages. But since it is just, like, a character study, basically, because there's not a whole lot of an arc, at least not that I saw, that I thought it was good. It was enjoyable to read.
I just thought that Zora weaved in, like, a lot of thoughts or feelings she had about the world, but they, rather than be some sort of arc that makes a point and then descends, it just kind of like all touched one another, and then the big, you know, the big whatever, I don't know, climax of the novel is not really connected in any way except for the fact that Janie is the one who's experiencing it, right? At least I didn't really get a strong connection to previous parts of the plot.
Yeah. And it is such an absurd peak to the book that there is a natural disaster where her husband is bit by a rabid dog and she has to kill him versus the kind of general, like, mundane nature of her life leading up to that.
Right.
Something about that is striking, that she just goes all out with that climax.
It's a story about climate change, really.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Zora Neale Hurston's a famous early climate change bell ringer.
She predicted the Dust Bowl, so
that's right.
Yeah,
they called her the Greta of the 1930s.
They called her the Al Gore of the 1930s.
Let's just say she needed to chill out and watch a movie.
Yeah, come on, chill, Zora, chill. Any other things about this book besides it's good?
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those books I just read. I'm like, it's good, and I don't have a ton to say about it.
The difference I felt, or the only thing that really jumped out at me, other than what we've mentioned so far, is the difference between the dialect and then when it's her as narrator It's like just such a different register English.
Jesus Christ,
that it's jarring a little bit.
It is. We texted about that today, didn't we?
Yeah.
There are like passages where it's like they have some really beautiful like paragraphs of just in you know, plain English or however you describe it. And then jumps right back into the dialogue.
It's, I would actually just say that's like a general negative of the book because it feels so ham-fisted, right? Like, she's pretty good. She was Southern, I believe, and so she has a command of the dialogue. But to just jump back and forth, like, Flannery does not do that.
No,
I feel like Janie mediates it because Janie has less of an accent.
Like,
it's not every
less.
Single word.
Yeah.
Like, some characters, literally every single word is not spelled correctly.
Mm. Can I ask you guys something? Did you notice, like, something odd about the perspective in terms of like first person, second person, and like narration?
What do you mean? Not really, or not that I remember.
No, maybe we'll cut this, but I feel like there were a couple parts where it was like an omnipotent narrator.
Oh yeah, no, there's definitely an omnipotent narrator. Yeah.
But that doesn't really make sense to me because isn't it about Janie recounting the story to Phoebe?
Yeah.
So that's something that...
It is kind of autobiographical. We talked about that in text today, too.
But there is an omnipotent narrator because there are scenes that Janie is not present during.
Right. She sees stuff that Tea Cakes does.
But
right.
Isn't the point that she's recounting the story to Phoebe? That's the whole setup of the book, right?
She probably, right. like... character is, like, imagining it. Or she remembers it and creates it in her mind.
But I guess it describes her walking down the street and then, like, Phoebe... I think it's from Phoebe's perspective in the first few pages. It doesn't matter. I don't think that's necessarily a negative, but it's kind of unusual.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Zora doesn't put as much like stock into the logical aspect of that.
I mean, I thought about it once for like 2 minutes and then I didn't think about it again for the rest of the books. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's interesting nonetheless.
I do think it's interesting when you jump back and forth between like perspectives, but I don't know. I kind of noticed it, or I just felt off a little bit, probably because it's not jarring, but it feels weird to go from first to third person. But yeah, I don't know. It happens less so later on once they get to Florida.
Mm.
I feel like it's more at the beginning. The only part or the best part of prose I thought was actually at the beginning. For me, it was on page 25. She's describing just like the end of the day before she even runs off with Joe. She knew that God tore down the old world every evening and built up a new one by sunup. It was wonderful to see it take form with the sun emerge from the gray and the dust of its making. The familiar people and things had failed her, so she hung over the gate and looked up the road towards just a ways off. She knew now that marriage did not make love. Janie's first dream was dead, so she had become a woman instead. That was a good chapter.
That
ending.
Is really good. God was tearing down the day, or what is that she says?
Yeah, tearing down the day and making it back up again out of the dust.
That is... That's a really nice sentence.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, right? But it was really hard for me to, like, grab those memorable moments because of the, I don't know, I just thought the contrast between the dialogue and the description was just so a lot.
It is a lot. It makes it stand out more, I think.
I felt overwhelmed by the dialogue.
Really?
Yeah.
At first, I certainly was, but then once you get the flow going, it feels okay.
I'd say it's also not as bad once she leaves the town. Because then the second half of the book is more about her and Tea Cakes.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really fun part to read.
But versus like there's 10 characters in the first half of the book, just random town people.
And they all have really funny names.
And yeah, everybody's so dramatic. Like they insult each other mildly. And it's like, oh, I'd rather be dead than have that done to me. Or it's like, oh, I'm going to shoot myself. They try to like, people are drunk and they try to get two guys to kiss each other. And one goes out and like eats grass and he said he's going to commit suicide or something. It's like everybody's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, that was really weird.
I love that.
Drinking all the time.
When Janie's watching the boys try to win the heart over that woman on the street when she's like watching through the window. And, you know, he's like... You know, Lord, if I go get a steamship for you, you know,
yeah.
Like, I'd steal the whole Navy for you, girl. Like, I thought that was really funny. I think this book is like it's definitely worth a second read, right? I feel like I would get a lot more out of Zora's writing if I read it a second time, because I wasn't really expecting. I mean, we've been reading Southern Gothic, and so there's always these different takes on Southern dialogue, and I just thought hers was very literal.
Yeah. Definitely. It's not like, I think that like Flannery O'Connor's is written to be easily read.
Yeah, there's a strong coherence throughout all of the writing. Not, you know, the dialogue and the descriptions have a, you know, they feel like they're one thing, whereas this doesn't.
I think the autobiographical part plays into the wanting to go for authenticity. I would want to read it later on too for the dialogue. It's nice to read it through once for the plot, but then I feel like there's a lot of stuff and just wordplay with dialogue that I missed because it's dialect.
This was my second time through it, and I found I really enjoyed it a lot.
More than the first time?
Yeah, I think so. I enjoyed it. I think I was more impressed the first time I read it, but I enjoyed the read more this time.
Oh, okay.
Which is probably a weird answer, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I couldn't... So we've done Flannery, right? And then this is our second Southern Gothic novel, right?
Yeah.
Where are we going next after the Christmas?
Yeah, where are we?
Next week, we'll be reading A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens to celebrate this lovely holiday season, and the victory of Boris Johnson and the Tories to the UK Parliament.
A fitting story.
Yes.
The Christmas present is going to be Brexit. He wants it done by Christmas.
Buddy. That's what I'm talking about, Troy.
That's so fucking British. Done by Christmas.
Is that for real? Are they really going to do it?
That's one of their pledges. It might be the new year, but either the new year or Christmas. Yeah,
absolute raw dog. But yeah, Christmas Carol. It's going to be nice.
Yeah, it'll be really good.
A little Christmas special.
But what do we think we're going to do afterwards?
I would like to return to Faulkner. Like after reading, I feel like I'd like to read his two most famous novels, and then we can move on because we do have like 7 books in this genre.
Well, so what are... So The Sound and the Fury, and what's the other one?
I think it was The Sound
and
the Fury.
Late in August, The Unvanquished.
Well, we can do one Faulkner novel, but I do want to read In Cold Blood.
Ooh, yeah. Actually, nice. We can do In Cold Blood next.
Honestly,
because my grandma has it.
You just read The Sound and the Fury, right? You didn't like it?
I just don't like Faulkner.
Ooh, interesting.
Wow.
I love In Cold Blood. That's a great book.
But let's do In Cold Blood. We should do another Faulkner novel together, even if you hate him.
No, I'll do it. Good. I'll do anything. Yeah.
You read Carlisle, you can do anything.
I'm halfway through The Sound of the Fury right now, so double whammy might take all the joy out of reading in my life.
Right. But if we did Sound of the Fury, you're already halfway done, right?
Yeah, if you want to do that, that's fine.
Okay. Well, are you okay with that, Troy?
Let's do In Cold Blood first, because I also really want to read that.
It's such a good book. We'll blast right through it.
Cool. And then maybe we do, do you guys want to do A Streetcar Named Desire at some point?
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'd like to do that.
Yeah, we can watch the movie too.
Yeah, we should have a video.
My wife wants to watch the movie because Marlon Brando is very, very hot in it.
Oh, he looks so good in it.
God, so good.
He's jacked as fuck too.
He's really jacked. He has that that pretty Polish face. Or what is he? Italian? Oh, he's a Polak in the movie.
Of course they wouldn't cast an actual Polak in
Brando,
the movie.
Brando, what's that last name? Is it Brandowski?
Italian?
Brandowskiewicz.
Okay. Yeah, Brandowskiewicz.
Classic Pole.
Brandownstein. He's definitely a Jew.
Brandow Jaboja. Yeah.
Her last name's Johnson, I'll have you know.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Mind blown.
Whoa.
Chloe, you'll always be a Wojavoda to me.
Wojavoda. Turn. That's how my family
Man, we're doxing all sorts of people on the pod tonight. Just giving out all sorts of good information.
Chloe and Sam with Chester, New Hampshire.
Send your bombs to apartment 1W. Yeah.
better yet, SWAT them.
SWAT them, yeah. Red flag the house.
Oh, you're on a list.
All right, thanks for listening.
All right. Oh, wait. Well, let me do the correct outro.
I'm joking.
Let's give a plug to this to Chris too.
Yeah. So, in case that last conversation did not make anything clear to you, we are reading A Christmas Carol for next week by Charles Dickens. We're reading the whole thing, so if you'd like to read and join us, we would love that. And if you'd like to leave a voicemail on our Book Nerd hotline, call 1-978-255-3404. That's 1-978-255-3404. And we will play it live on the show, and you will get our, not live, but duly delivered reactions.
Leave us a voicemail.
Please leave us a voicemail.
Please.
We'll just start leaving ourselves voicemails and playing them on the show.
We're just going to be getting our various girlfriends to call in. Compliment us.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.